Sounds great. Well, thanks to all of you for taking time out of your schedules to join us today. I'm going to start out with a little bit of an introduction as to what's changed in our Elite Buyer program when we've rebranded to Legacy Choice. And a lot of that has to do with the reasons that we're having these calls. And so you probably experienced before with the Elite Buyer program, it was mainly about the listings that we have for practice sales and your ability to pursue those acquisitions. And what we recognized in that particular platform is it's hard to deliver value to a large group of people when only one person gets ultimately selected for each sale. And we have roughly 40 people who pursue each sale. So we made a decision last year that we're going to change the positioning of the platform to helping you all become better buyers wherever you find a seller. And that's part of the reason for the new resources available to you and other resources like these calls, where we're going to go through different subjects that hopefully will help you all become better buyers wherever you find sellers. And that's the subject for today, actually, is, where do you locate sellers and really how do you engage them successfully to have a good or better close ratio? Briefly, as far as the resources go that you have now have available to you, it's quite a number of things, and it's all really positioned again to help you become better buyers. So we're offering, for example, an additional $200 off a business valuation. So if you engage somebody and you need to get a valuation done on their practice or your own, you can get a discounted price. $300 off continuity plans. Often people use continuity planning as one of their vehicles for acquisitions. Engaging people in a continuity plan, ultimately, potentially you become their buyer when they're ready. We're having these lunch and learn sessions, and thank you for joining that. One of the big things that we added to the service menu is you get a free 45-minute consultation with one of our coaches. If you engage a seller and you need to just discuss different aspects of the engagement. So we're happy to work with you, talk about where you're at with that particular seller, answer questions that you may have, help you get over hurdles, et cetera, to help you move forward in that particular acquisition. And then we have access to quite a few written resources, podcasts, and so forth. But you'll see quite a few items that are specifically intended for you to use as resources for engaging sellers. I picked out two examples for today's subject matter just to give you an idea of how you might use those resources. So let's say, for example, you're engaging a seller and they're giving you the typical response of, well, I'm looking to retire in about 5 years. That's what most people say, actually. It's called the 5-year plan in our office. And so there's a couple of resources in there that you could refer to that'll help you get over that hurdle, for example. We have a white paper that I wrote about sell and stay strategies, for example. And so if someone gives you the 5-year runway, then you can, engage them in potential discussions around selling and staying. You're buying the equity, they're staying on, and that oftentimes gets people over that hurdle. Another resource would be specifically how does the conversation with the seller's clients go? A lot of times that becomes an emotional hurdle. And we have a really good article in the resource folder that helps you present that to the potential seller and helps them get over the hurdle of having that conversation with their clients or imagining that in the future is probably more appropriate. And just two good examples, I think, of resources available to you to really help you engage sellers and be successful in closing those deals. You might be surprised to hear that my role in acquisitions is pretty much the same as yours when you're trying to engage sellers. That's a big part of my job. Anytime you've seen or our job, all of us that are on this call today, anytime you've seen us bring a sale to market, and we also do a lot of other types of sales activity, we've had to engage those sellers very similarly to how you engage a seller. And so I've literally been doing that for years. I've engaged hundreds of sellers. The only real difference is I'm engaging them to sell to you and you're engaging them to sell to you. So maybe that's a difference or a similarity. I'm not sure. So the resources that we offer are the resources that we use. And if you don't know exactly what resource to use, then we're certainly happy to help you do that. So hopefully that gives you a feel for, what this new platform is intended to do. We really want to help you become successful in acquisitions. We've seen some incredible success with people that we work on a regular basis. They've built, literal empires on acquisitions, and we help you to build your own scale empire as well, depending on what your goals are. So as you know, we ask a few questions when you register for these, and did get some responses. I find they're pretty similar, and the response, generally for this session was, where do I find sellers specifically? I have a hard time with that. And then, how do I engage them? And so I think a lot of the conversation today can be around those things. We have a relatively small group, so I'd definitely like to call on all of you to participate, because a big part of the value of these sessions is peer sharing. And, we don't want to just listen to me speak, certainly. And we'd love to hear some of the things. I know, some of you have a lot of experience, and we'd love to hear from you regarding these items. So when we think about where do you find sellers, I wanted to share two different things that I think will help put that into perspective. So the first item, just to set the, the framework for this, is why do people sell their practice? And this is a question we always ask of our own clients who are selling is, why are you selling? And it's important to understand what the top three reasons that people provide us that they're selling their practice. And it's in this order of the number of sellers. So number one is burnout. Number two is life events. And life events usually has to do with a health situation. Number three, and you have to get all the way down to number three, is a planned retirement. So having that understanding of why people sell can really help you also understand how to engage them or where to engage them. Then if we look at the top three types of sales based on the number that goes into each of these sales lanes, this is a very good indicator of where to find sellers as well. So the number one place, or the number one type of sale that we see by a huge margin, is what we call a closed deal. And a closed deal is when two individuals have found each other. It's usually based on a long-term relationship, and they've agreed to buy and sell with each other. That's probably close to 80% of transactions in our industry are in the closed deal lane. The next two types of sales, which I would say are currently about equally weighted, are next gen transitions internally, where someone's selling to an AFA. There is an opportunity there that I'll talk about later if I remember to do so. And then the final one, which is probably the least number of sales relative to the entire marketplace, is open market sales, like our own platform that you've all participated in. I mean, we would love to get everyone in the open market lane, trust me, but it's just not reality. And the reality is, where you're going to find the most deals is certainly through your close relationships with other advisors in the closed deal lane. And so if you think about it in those terms, why people sell and where the most sales are happening, that should give you a good indicator of, where you want to position yourself. In respect to the sales lanes, we would always recommend you participate in multiple lanes, or, in as many as you can, because of course that's going to increase the probability of you getting in front of the largest number of sellers. But you want to focus your efforts on, where you have the highest probability of finding and engaging and closing those deals, and that's going to be in the closed sale lane. So hopefully that gives you a little bit of an overview. I'd like to just take a break for a second and ask all of you, where have you successfully engaged sellers? What strategies do you use? What's worked or not worked? Because again, this is really about peer sharing. We have a lot of people come to us through the work that we do, but all of you have to go out there and find it, really. And I guess that's one difference. So Who wants to share some of their own experience? Or I could start, Greg, I know that you do. So would you mind giving us some ideas?
You know, every practice I bought's been the relationship practice. I already had the relationship with them. I have not made a practice. I've tried to practice by through you guys, and it hasn't worked. So my only success is by having a relationship with the people and buying their practices. That's the only success I have.
So definitely in that closed deal lane is where, and have most of them been long-term relationships with those advisors? How has that looked?
The very to get back in practice, no, the first one wasn't, but the other ones were long-term relationships, yes.
Okay. How have you, I'm just curious, just to kind of expand on that a little bit. Where did you get to know those folks? Is it through conferences? Just.
No, started in the same office together
Oh, okay.
for a lot of them, and then met the other ones through other people, just network and talking to people. So just a combination of different things.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep.
Mark, you any experience to share with us?
Sure. So I'm in the P1 environment at Ameriprise for the past 23 years and have a practice of 10 advisors that I work with. I personally have not closed any deals, but I have gotten them and then put them with another advisor that needed to buy a practice, right?
I
And
see.
so we've been relying on our management to source the people to call. So generally speaking, every Thursday for 2 hours, I have on my team about eight people that are dialing advisors over the age of 50, blah, blah, blah. They have all these things. And so we call them, we host quarterly lunches, we host webinars, and we get somebody along the way. And the last one was a woman that actually started with IDS a very long time ago, and she got cranky when they stopped allowing her to do tax returns. And she ended up coming back, and we placed her with a female advisor, and they closed the deal, and we brought in more assets than she ever knew her clients had, of course, because they weren't getting properly serviced, and she didn't provide the full thing. And we also purchased one in Tiburon, where we basically called her out of the blue off of Yelp. So I type in a zip code, and then I go for Yelp reviews for advisors in that zip code. She wanted me to buy her tax practice, and I was not in the mood for that. But it took 3 years. We got a little $20 million practice that in Tiburon that turned out to be about $42 million once we got everything going, and that was good for one of our younger advisors. He lives nearby, the service area, and it worked out great for him. And in my case, I'm working on a $150 million practice that I called off of one of these lists. Over in Sacramento, and we're moving along. We've gotten some of the due diligence done and that sort of thing. And the other ones that I'm in, what I prefer to do is the slower method where I want to be plan C. So my pitch to people that I'm working with, I'm only 52, pretty healthy. I'm going to work, I think, for quite a while because I enjoy it. I tell them, hey, you've probably got a plan A. You've got a coworker, you've got a younger person at your office. You may have a family member. That's probably your plan A for succession plan. I get that. I don't want to mess up with that. You might even have a plan B, somebody in another office nearby who's also with the same firm. Cool. I'm not looking to mess with that. I'm going to offer you plan C, that if those fail or if they don't have any money, or if you get cranky with them, we create a buy-sell agreement where I'm actually plan C. And I've got three of these that have already been implemented. One of them's actually a franchisee with Ameriprise. The other two are RIAs. And they really don't know anyone that does business the way they do. And so we've kind of gotten along to where I understand how weird they are and what I'm willing to put up with if I were to take over their practice. And then I take them out to dinner twice a year with their spouse just to make sure we're in touch. But I'm plan C. If a bus runs over them and plan A and B doesn't work, at least I'm there with plan C. I've passed on a number of practices and I've been outbid. The last one was about 3 months ago, and They said I was like number four in line based on price, and we're doing enough referral business that I'm not willing to pay 430% for a practice. Some of my younger advisors have paid quite a bit of money, but I'm just not willing to do that.
Yeah. Well, thanks for sharing. There's a lot to take away from that. So Tiburon's a great market, right? I used to work in Mill Valley, so I know that area well. But I think, my biggest takeaway from what you shared is, how intentional it is. I can imagine if everyone spent 2 hours a week on the phone reaching out to advisors, 60 plus, years of age, 20 plus years of service and so forth. They're going to generate some interest, and it's just a matter of being there at the right time. And that goes to the what I introduced originally, that the two first reasons people sell are burnout and life events. And so you have to do exactly what you're doing, Mark, is which you just have to be there and consistently be there and engage them. And then when you're there at the right time, you're the person, that they're going to select. And a lot of times it's kind of like the ease of knowing that you've been consistently following up. Some of
There's
the
40
sales
of
that we've
us. There,
seen
there's
from
40 of
us.
us that are dialing every Thursday.
Oh,
40 of
that's
us.
awesome. Yeah. I mean, some of the sales that we brought to market, I've worked with them for years, just consistently having a call periodically and just being there. And someday they're going to sell their practice, but it's not always as soon as you'd like it. So thank you. That was really great. Let's take one more. James, Jody, anything that you'd like to share as far as your own experience goes? You'll need to unmute your phones there.
Yeah, so I am just barely getting started. So this is like an intro for me, and I am operating on behalf of my advisor. So I'm just kind of like learning the processes to be able to identify and then meet with my advisor and create our plan of action to move forward. So this is day one almost.
Okay.
Learning the processes and just trying to figure out which direction to go. And listening to you guys speaking, it's very helpful. And I think that being able to reach out and obtain more knowledge will be very helpful to me as I move forward.
That's great. Thanks for sharing that. You're not alone in that seat, actually, because we're seeing a lot of the larger practices where the principals or the founders and so forth are not the people managing this activity now. We wouldn't mind having them on the call. So if on a future call, if you want to bring them along with you just to get some of their own experience over the years, that would be nice. But what you're doing is what a lot of people are doing or going to be doing, and I'm glad that you're joining this process as well. So let's move on to the next section. I mentioned that the common questions that we received for this particular session, and frankly, this is what we get from a lot of people, is how do I engage them? And we don't have time to go really deep into the weeds, but I think there's some simple things to think about when it comes to engaging a seller. And I see some common threads and mistakes people make as well. That I think we can, have a little bit of a conversation around that. So when I think about engaging a seller, there's really three different parts of a deal, and that's the price, fit, and terms. And this is another thing that we ask our own clients, when we're, initially engaging them to get to know them and what their goals are, is, how do you rank those things? Which of the, they're all important. Okay. So none of that is not important, of course, in a deal, but what is the most important? And the typical answer that we get, not from everybody, from the majority of people, is that fit is number one, and price and terms probably relatively equal. So with that understanding, your initial conversations with any seller candidate should be largely based on the fit. And what they're very concerned about, I would say the most concerned, is first, how are you going to take care of their clients the way that they do? Hopefully, you'll do better in most cases because most buyers have more resources, a larger practice, and people are looking for that these days, which is a little bit of a shift. Secondarily, how will you take care of their team? because most people, most practices are enterprise sales these days. Book sales are a little bit more rare, kind of a thing of the past. There's still some left, but not as frequent. So they want to make sure that their team's going to have a good place to land, which it frankly is the goal of most buyers as well. They do want to keep the team. And then, lastly, it's the price and the terms, and again, those are pretty equal. So that should really be your approach. One of the mistakes that I see as a common thread that people do in the interviews or in their engagement process with sellers is they tend to focus a lot on their own practice and not as much on what the seller is looking for in terms of those, buckets that I just mentioned. So when I think about that conversation, you're probably wanting it to be about 80% about them, 20% about you, but I would focus on the them part first. Make sure that they know that you really understand what's important to them about the deal. And keep in mind, because I think a lot of people get hung up on multiples and price and so forth. That's important, but it's not what's going to really engage them. So you want to let them know that you have a sincere interest in making sure that their clients and their team are taken care of. I have a relatively simple way to go about that I'll share, but everyone, has their own process of doing that. And the approach that I use is, and this is very, very high level, is, first, do they like you? Second, do they trust you? And third, can you help them achieve their goal? It's an old sales methodology that I've always thought worked great. It's really easy to implement, and it's a good way to have the conversation flow. So, if they don't like you and they don't trust you, there's no point in continuing the conversation. Those are the two most important parts. Once you've achieved those things, then, you helping them achieve their goals is the details. You can put together the term structure of the deal, the transition, and so forth. Once you've established those two things, it becomes a little bit of a downhill slope in terms of, putting together the details of the deal, as long as you've checked those two boxes of they're liking you and trusting you. So with that, I'd like to get a little bit more, kind of information from you about what have you done, in the actual engagement with sellers. Do you, like Mark said, take them out to dinner once a year? Do you do lunch, coffee, meetings? How have you, engaged people who you've been successful in actually closing the deals? I think that's some really great information for y'all to share, because my position is a little bit different in that respect. I get in front of a pretty large number of folks. But what have you done?
Hey
And
Todd, I have
in
one more idea before we get to that question. And many of us have been in the business for a long time. And when we first were in the business, we went to all the wholesaler lunches we could go to because it was free food and we didn't have any money. And then people stopped going. And if you go for a different reason, you'll find it successful. And especially if it's a mixed crowd where it's not just someone in your broker dealer, but it's someone that the wholesaler serves multiple people. So when you go to these lunches and you go to these dinners, sit next to the person who has the grayest hair and strike up a conversation with them. So it's another way of leveraging the wholesalers without having to really go there to listen to the product. Now, don't tell them I told you to say that I told you that, but it's a great way to meet people. It's a way to network. And to sit next to the people who look like they might be getting ready to retire.
that's great, Tony. Jim, I haven't called on you. Did you have anything to share regarding your activity in engaging sellers?
Well, I'd say that most of my time is spent on the telephone with folks who have shown interest by responding to my FinLink Succession Link inquiry, my RIA Connect inquiry, a couple other deals that we've closed have been, fairly close relationships. So it's just a different set of circumstances every time. We are looking nationwide, and that means you're not going to have coffee with everybody. We are, looking for a fairly specific set of criteria And our deal terms are quite a bit different in that we're not writing a check at the close. We're a firm that does everything on a revenue share basis, and that helps shift some risk for us and for the seller. The seller takes the risk that they're not getting a check, and that clients leave, and that they're not getting as much from the deal as they might otherwise. The risk that we take off the table is the same that they're assuming. On the other hand, we're taking the risk that we pay far more for our firm because we're paying for the lifetime of the advisor and the spouse. And the upside that the seller is taking on is that they're really betting on themselves. They're going to bet that the clients are going to stick around, and that we can capture greater wallet share, and we can network with those clients because all of those revenues will flow per the agreement to the seller. So instead of paying 3 or 4 times top line gross revenue, that seller has far more upside. So if they're confident in their client relationships, they're going to do quite a bit better with our firm than with other firms.
That's great. And I appreciate the idea of having a specific value proposition that you're working that's unique. And I see quite a few different ways to slice that. I had a conversation with an advisor that I've worked with for years. He's built an amazing practice. He's like $1.5 billion under management. And we were talking about the acquisition space, and he had a very unique proposition that I hadn't heard before, but I think it makes a lot of sense where he's pursuing partnerships in next gen transitions. Great idea, because next gen transitions are going to become, one of the most common ways practices are transitioned, because larger practices tend to transition internally. But what he's positioned himself as doing is, a lot of times those next gen advisors, their employees, they don't have money available. Their lending ability is a little bit more limited, cash flow more limited. So he's looking to partner with the next gen advisors and, in various acquisitions, and become not only a financial resource, but also a leadership resource. And so I thought that was an amazing value proposition that is also very unique. And so I think you learn to work a unique value proposition like that, and there's plenty of other examples of those. That's a great approach. It sets you apart from all the other people that they're getting phone calls from during the day.
Hey, Jim, I have a question for you because you rattled off a number of platforms there, FinLink and RIA Connect, I think. Have you had any success with those platforms?
Yes, we have. We closed a deal last year with RIA Connect. It was something that happened very quickly. The geographies of our firms worked well. He was a Chicago native. We're a Chicago-based firm. Most of his clients are in Chicago or have moved to Florida, where he is now. So there's a lot of similarities there. Another firm was a kind of a lift out in upstate New York that we identified through SuccessionLink at the time. And that was a more lengthy process, plenty of phone calls, hours on the weekends, getting to know one another. So that's worked quite well. Another deal we closed was just a blind email. And the seller was, we piqued their interest somehow, and it didn't happen immediately, but it took a few months. But he decided to sell to us. And then another was one where one of the principals of the firm was a institutional salesperson at a enormous brokerage firm that we've all heard of 30 years ago. And I was going through some data. We use Advisor Pro. We've used others in the past. And I recognized this guy's name, and it was close enough in our backyard that I knew that it's got to be the same guy. And he's older than I am, and I'm 63. So I knew he was a prime candidate, and he and his partner had been looking. And they decided, well, here's someone that one of us knows, and they became acquainted with our firm, and we were able to close that deal within, 5 or 6 months. So
That's great. I mean, you've
a variety of different methods. Plus, I'm trying to work with more of the brokers, networking at conferences and whatnot. So I'm trying to cast a bigger net because, I recognize that our deal structure isn't for everyone. So I'm probably going to need more times at bat in order to have success. But I think everyone at the firm is pretty pleased with the pace that we're taking at this point.
Well, it's obvious you've made an investment in this and you're very serious about it because not all of those programs you just mentioned are cheap. And so, you've subscribed to a number of services that are going to help you in lead generation. And I think some people want to acquire practices, but they don't make that commitment and invest in opportunities. But I don't know how, I didn't know how effective you found some of those platforms. So it's good to hear that you've had some success.
Well, I'd like to have more success. It's been one each at all of them, but I'd say that I think become better at recognizing deals that aren't going to be a good fit because I'm asking the right questions earlier on. I had an encounter with a person not too long ago where he was his firm's fee schedule was very, very competitive. And by that I mean like below the 20th decile in all the services that I looked at. And he was really hung up on, will my clients be able to keep the same fee schedule? And I did the analysis of our current fee schedule, our prior, the one even before that, and said, we need to be able to treat everyone similarly. And we just wouldn't generate the sufficient revenue on a dated fee schedule that wasn't going to make us any money. So that deal kind of went by the wayside. But great guy. I think it was a fantastic fit. I thought it was someone I liked, someone I trusted, and likewise, but we just couldn't get there on the deal terms.
Thanks for sharing. It's definitely a numbers game to some extent, but I think what we've seen as well is that success breeds success in the acquisition space. So the more experience people get, the more intentional their strategy is, the better their value proposition is, then they don't have to get in front of quite as many folks to get deals done. I know a lot of people don't like to get on the phone, and start, making cold calls and so forth, but a lot of that activity has to happen. I think one of the things that I used to do when I worked in a large practice in my role was acquisitions, was to have the initial contact via email for continuity planning, because as we know, a majority of advisors in our industry don't have a plan for death and disability. It's a kind of a soft icebreaker that can get you in front of people for the conversation. Some of
Marched.
them you can convert to potential sellers, and some of them you can engage in a continuity plan or a buy-sell agreement and be, their ultimate successor. So there's certainly some soft approaches to generating the calls that you ultimately want to have, because you're not going to probably close a deal via email. So
Naturally, Mark, that was Mark's plan C. And
You should
it's
get
a
a
lot.
hat that says a plan C on it.
Yeah, we have been hosting these quarterly succession planning workshops where they get a CE credit, and the lady that we closed in January had attended two of those workshops, and it turns out that I was not the right one for her. So hey, cool. We have lots of people available to purchase your practice. I just happen to be the one that has that outreach as my focus. But I'm probably pickier than the seller is. I've passed every deal on to someone else because I'm not looking to pay that much money, and I also don't like some of the requirements sometimes. So it's got to be pretty nice for me. So the 150 million, I'm willing to do a lot of things for that practice, but these small ones, it might be more hassle than it's worth with we're already servicing, quite a few, but getting out there and talking to them and getting in person meetings, I think is really important. And it's interesting as you listen to them talk to other advisors at other firms, a lot of these people have been stuck in their office for a long time, and they don't go out to the FPA meetings anymore, and they don't talk to other people, and they're talking about Roth conversions and stuff that just completely, and I'm not going to interrupt them. I want to hear what they're talking about, so I try to just sit there and be quiet once we're done with the workshop, and then follow up with it.
Yeah, that's great. Well, I see we're getting close to the top of our time here, so I just want to kind of wrap it up. And thanks for all of you who participated. Certainly these, the value of these meetings is really going to rely on, everybody bringing something to the table, because we want to hear from everyone's success or what doesn't work. Frankly, it's good to know as well, what's working, what's not working. Our sessions are roughly scheduled for the second Thursday of each month, so keep your eye out for, the invites for each session. The next one is going to be how to make a winning offer. So something, around along the lines of price and terms, and we can get into the weeds in that. Certainly, that's an area I know pretty well. If any of you know someone that you think, would benefit from this, we certainly would like to bring more people into these groups, have more participation. We really want to hear what people have been doing. So if you can think of any advisors that that are also, trying to implement an acquisition strategy, or, they have been and, might be a good resource for everyone else in the group, we'd certainly love to hear from those folks. And I guess, again, I'll just leave it with a reminder about the resources. So use the resources. There's some great stuff. If you don't know what to use or how to use it and so forth, reach out to me directly. I'm always happy to help. If you engage a seller and you're not, quite getting traction with those folks, remember you have the free 45-minute session with one of us. And we're happy to work you through a lot of hurdles. There probably isn't a situation I haven't seen, although seems like every deal is a little bit different, but we can, certainly provide some insights there. So any last thoughts from you, Tony, or anyone
Yeah,
else
I
on
would
the
just
call?
say, this is our second episode, if you will, and so we're still learning, trying to get through some of the technology issues like making new panelists. But we are 100% open to feedback and ideas. So, if you guys wanted to shoot either me or Todd an email, just saying, "Hey, let's consider doing this," or "I didn't like that," or "Can we do some," those kind of things. We No hard feelings here. You give us whatever feedback you want to give us, because we just want to make this as best we can for all the participants.
Great. Well, thanks everyone for joining. Hopefully, we'll see you in the next session. And again, if you know anyone else that might benefit from this, please introduce them to our platform. We'd love to have them. Take
Thanks,
care.
everyone.
Thank you all.
Thank you.